Hi, I'm Brian Cohen.
And I'm H. Claire Taylor. Have you struggled to keep up with the fast-changing world of self-publishing?
Do you want to learn the latest news, tips, and tactics to help you sell more books now and into the future?
Welcome to the Sell More Books Show, a weekly podcast that gives you all the info you need to know in under an hour.
To save you time, give you motivation, and boost your publishing profit.
Enough waffling. Let's get started.
Okay, Claire, on with the show. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Sell More Book Show, episode 347. Ooh, boy, we have a jam-packed news show for you today. I'm Brian Cohen from Amazon Ad School and Best Page Forward, joined by H. Claire Taylor from FFS Media. Claire, when we came up with the idea of the show originally 340 something episodes ago, Mr. Kukral and I, the weeks like this were the reason we did, because so much is happening. There are weeks where we honestly are treading water, but this week is not one of them. So many things that impact a lot of authors happening this week. How are you doing?
I'm very excited about this show because you sent me the notes. You were like, this is a big week. I thought you were kidding. And then I opened them and I was like, oh my gosh. Okay.
Oh, it wasn't sarcasm.
For once. But yeah, other than that, I'm doing good. I'm having a pretty easy week. I'm like so into revisions that I've kind of pushed everything else off my schedule. Cause I'm like, well, if this is what I'm really into right now, and I have like five projects going on anyway, like they can wait, you know, if nobody else is waiting on them. But so that's really nice. I've been working outside a lot. And that is lovely, a little Texas privilege right now. What about you, Brian?
Oh, things are pretty good here. Obviously, like many folks in the U.S., we are not traveling this week. Normally, we probably would have been packing our bags and headed off to my folks. But we have a nice little, just the three of us and the cat Thanksgiving plan. As I check, yes, Rocket is in here listening to the show as
our producer.
Our producer, Rocket. My wife was calling Rocket my executive assistant earlier. And I said, I gave her work to do on the first day and she's never done it. But we are looking forward to just the three of us for Thanksgiving. And as always, we are very thankful to be doing this show and thankful to have you listening out there in podcast land. Claire, you're going to have a pretty small thing or no thing at all?
Yes. Yes, that is the plan. We were talking for a while about driving up to Chicago to see John's family and just like an immediate family thing, but it would have been 16 hours without a break. And and he works with the public, so he's probably the highest risk. So we thought, you know, we'll just add it to the list of reasons why pandemics suck.
Yes. And the list is growing longer and longer. But yeah, so let's get into today's show. We have a winner of the Sizzling Synopsis Plus Book to Be Named Later prize grab, and that is Eustacia Tan. Eustacia, please email me at brian@sellingforauthors.com. to claim your prize. And Lisa, who earned the prize several weeks ago, my apologies that I kept failing to send the book within the city limits of Chicago. I couldn't even get the book from one neighborhood to another to this point, but I will. It's on the list for tomorrow. So let's hop into the featured patrons. First, we have A Turn for the Worse by Lori Drake. She couldn't save his life. Can she save his soul? A Turn for the Worse introduces a new breed of werewolf in an edge-of-your-seat adventure chock full of surprising twists, complex emotions, and a diverse cast of characters. If you like strong, independent women, nail-biting mysteries, and a generous dose of the supernatural, as well as convention-defying tales, you will love this book. That is A Turn for the Worse. Claire, over to you.
Sounds fun. We have Strings of Subversion by K. Victoria Chase. October 1935. Nazis ban jazz. Winter 1935. The jazz underground is born. Her people are disappearing, carted away under cover of night by the mysterious Gestapo force. Musician Willie Cooper could run back to her home in the United States, but her half-Black, half-German niece and nephew rely on her income to survive as their mother is shunned by her own people. Willie descends deeper into the underground, her fate becoming entwined with a Nazi sympathizer who has a penchant for jazz. Ooh, Strings of Subversion.
I really like that title. Now I want to like get a string, put it on the wall, and right next to it, String of Subversion. It would go well with the paper plate I have on the wall here. Okay. Mayhem and Murder by Ronald Yarosh is the next one. Women leave with a stranger they are never seen again alive. If you like fast-paced, page-turning excitement that will keep you reading into the night, join the thousands who have read the Johnny Sundance mystery series written by internationally read author Ronald J. Yarosh. Noir has never been better. That's Mayhem and Murder. You too can become a patron of the show at patreon.com/SMBS. And yes, you do get the show about 8 hours early. Every hour counts, people. Mm-hmm. So we have a question of the week, which was, what tricks do you use to keep your author life separate from your home address? I believe the first one is off to you, Claire.
Sure. Patrick O'Donnell said, I really don't. This might surprise some folks due to the nature of the job I recently retired from, but I believe people are genuinely interested in you as a person and enjoy hearing about your life outside of publishing. However, I do not publish my home address and stay a bit vague as far as where I live exactly. I do have my phone number as public information on my website. It hasn't come back to bite me in the arse yet.
Time will tell, Patrick. Roland Denzel said, I have a fake address via a free package forwarding service that I use for my email and website contact info. Technically, it's real, I guess, I think, anyway. I've never been there, but they say it's there. Anyhow, I use ViaBox. They give me an address with a suite number, and should mail or a fan go there, guess I'll hear about it via email. I guess via box will message Roland, hey, someone just showed up here. It's free, but if I do get mail, I have to pay to get it scanned or physically sent to me. One downside is that sometimes readers of my newsletter ask about it. I'm in Colorado and my address is in Oregon, if it's there, of course. Via box. That sounds like a kind of an interesting service. I'll have to check that out. Number three to you.
Eustacia Tan said, I use a business address for my mailing list and website registration, but that's about it for me. I mainly talk about books and tea on social media, trying out that author brand thing, although I'm not sure I'm doing it right. And that seems to have worked so far.
I want some tea. I've already got two green teas right here. So
I'm sucking down some Irish breakfast tea at this afternoon hour.
At this fine afternoon hour. Awesome.
Top of the afternoon to you.
Top of the afternoon. So let's get into the tips of the week.
The Selmo Book Show. It's the tip of the week.
Tip number one, bullet point marketing. Marketing a new release. Author Erica Ridley has a list of tactics that have consistently delivered great results over her 40 plus books. Ridley, writing for BookBub, says good marketing starts after you solidify your marketing message. Ask yourself why a reader should buy the book. Create a list of 4 to 5 tropes you can display as scannable bullet points. Quote, I share this list online and in my newsletter so readers can see at a glance why the book is for them, end quote. Second, creating a one-liner indicating tropes, character types, and conflict. Perfect for sharing on Twitter or Amazon ads where character count is limited. You can also use this at the top of your book description. It should be short enough to appear in full before the read more. Quote, it's your chance to quickly convince a casual browser that they do indeed want to learn more. For even more great tips from Erica, visit the BookBub blog. This is super interesting. I have never thought about having kind of a bullet point list of tropes and types, but I'm seeing one here. It makes a ton of sense for romance. Yes.
It probably makes sense for other genres. I think you can make it work. But for romance, it's like, yes, we want very specific things. And she nails it. And it's one of these things that proves that marketing starts as you write. That awareness as you're writing of, oh, what am I actually writing here? What are the tropes I'm hitting? And then jotting those down as you go so that you don't have to do that much on release day. I really like this approach because it's basically that checklist. Because sometimes, I mean, I know I've been there for sure, basically on release day, you're like, yes, it's great. Okay, like what else do I need to be doing?
Right.
Okay, you can't think of it. But if you can create a checklist like she lays out here, it's just, you can start doing this weeks in advance. As soon as you get your cover and you're, you know, drafting your book, you can start to put this these promotion materials together.
Yeah. Yeah. I absolutely just find this super interesting. She's got her post here with kind of an ad-like thing. It's 12 Dukes of Christmas, number 9. Forced proximity, snowed in, class differences, lady masquerading as commoner, sweet fun banter, sensual romance. And like you say, for romance, that makes sense. Even for something like cozy mystery, I could see, because there's lots of little, you know, cozy subgenres. I could see that, like cat familiar, like different things like that, that would fit. And obviously there are some subgenres where that might not work, but it's a super interesting concept. I don't know if I love the idea of it as the, almost like the hook in a book description, but what matters more than my theory on book descriptions and what we've used is what converts. You were to find that this converted better than a hook, use this, because all that matters is your conversion.
Well, it's probably smart for everyone to get clear on these things themselves anyway. And sometimes the right. only way to get really clear on it is to actually write it down. And looking at that list, I mean, I was trying to think, okay, how do I feel when I look at that list from the reader perspective? Because I used to really love Regency romances and I kind of forgot about them. And then I read one recently and I was like, oh yeah, this is why I love them. And I looked at that list and I was like, this looks fun. You know, like, I mean, yeah. These are the things that I like about it, just distilled down, you know, and you're not going to notice if there's 5 bullet points, you're not going to pay much attention to the one that doesn't hit you. You're just going to see 4 that really hit you. So yeah. It's sort of that bias of, oh, you know, what we see and what we ignore.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. All right. You want to take on number 2?
Sure. Protect Your Legacy. Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America, SFWA, has released the Bud Webster Legacy Kit to aid writers in compiling all the resources necessary to protect their estates and writing catalogs. The kit includes a checklist of important documents, sample book inventories, and a layman's glossary of important terms. Quote, with this resource, writers can begin to plan what happens to their literary properties after their death, says Mike Glyer of file770.com. The kit is available for all writers, not just SFWA members, and can be freely distributed. SFWA says the kit will be updated quarterly to ensure relevance and incorporate new information as needed. I got very excited when I saw this because this was something yes. I was recently joking with my husband about when we were, you know, in the kitchen joking about murdering each other for life insurance. But
as you do,
you know, I watch a lot of true crime, but he was like, yeah, I may not get much off you, but I'm going to get like a lot off your royalties. And I was like, have fun marketing my books. and it really, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, you make as much as you want, but you have to do all this stupid marketing. So yeah, I was like, oh, I should probably, and I have like a little bit of this set up, but I it was very much like groping in the dark. Yeah. I want to make sure that I don't just leave my husband high and dry.
Yeah, I think this is so important. And just the idea that you could actually have like a little pack with everything you might need in it, at least the guidance of that, is just so key. And I really like it. I love that it is freely distributed. And I think it's definitely worth checking out. And I think we should just call it the Bud.
The Bud.
For Bud Webster. We'll call it the Bud. I've no idea who Bud is. I'm sure there's information about that in the post. But here's to Bud.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bud.
This Bud's for Bud.
This Bud is for Bud. So go check that out at file770.com.
Good it's actually stuff. Funny because as a true crime listener, I had a lot of this together for a different reason. So I have this if I go missing list. I've already compiled all my passwords and stuff. And so if I go missing, John can find me very quickly. So for all of you people who listen to a lot of true crime podcasts or watch a lot, you can actually convert your if I go missing list into this legacy kit. So it's pretty sweet.
I laugh, and yet it is probably a good idea. Okay, let's go on to number three. Now with more bub, not to be confused with bud. Big news, there are now more design options in the BookBub ads creative builder, says the latest BookBub author newsletter. Quote, we're thrilled to announce we've added more customization options to the BookBub ads in Form Creative Builder. There are three new templates and three new color schemes for you to choose from, end quote. The new options make it even easier for authors to quickly create a wider variety of images for books. The new templates are available now in the BookBub partner dashboard. All right, so the caveat here is BookBub ads, while particularly well-targeted, if you do your research, you put in your money, they can be pretty pricey. And the new types here will potentially benefit someone who is willing to put in the time and effort into that testing process. But these ads do cost some money.
They do. Yeah, you got to kind of A-B test your way into these. You know, yeah. You can't just assume like, oh, well, I saw them the other day when I was creating ads and I was like, oh, more stuff for me to test. This is fun. Do-do-do. But yeah, there's like four color schemes or three new ones. So now four total.
Yeah.
And
there's background color options.
Yeah, yeah. And some people are going to say, oh, well, red must work better and just go with red. But you don't know if the red background works better than the white or the navy blue or the, you know, whatever the squiggly one is with the different colors from your cover. So you have to test out all of the new features before you're going to just assume, which does cost money. And you're right. What we love about BookBub, that it'll spend our money, is also the thing that can take us down the quickest.
Yeah, it's the funny thing with Amazon ads is you're like, please spend my money, please spend my money. But then you're pretty quickly like, whoa, 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 stop spending my money, stop spending my money. When they do start spending with BookBub, it's like you get to that whoa, whoa, whoa pretty quickly. And if your book converts well, going back up to what converts best, then this new feature should be helpful for you.
Yeah. And the real kicker with BookBub ads is that they usually spend when the emails go out in the morning. So depending on what time zone you're at, you know, I don't check my ads first thing in the morning because that screws up my brain focus for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
So I check them in the afternoon when it's usually too late. So I have to go. Yeah, there's no coming back. It's spent by the time I check.
It's gone.
Little amounts. And then I'm like, okay, this one, I like it spending like this. I'll add some more money. But if you're if you aren't going to be up at like between checking your ads between, you know, 8 and noon central time, you know, then you got to go careful.
Agreed. All right. Let's go into the top five news. And I believe you are up first.
It's time for the Sell More Books Show Top 5 News. Number 5.
Not a good look, Disney. Sci-fi author Alan Dean Foster hasn't been paid royalties since Disney bought Lucasfilm, despite Disney acquiring the rights and continuing to push some of Star Wars' most iconic novels, including the novelization of the original film. Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America, SFWA, President Marie Robinette Cowell says they've taken up the case. Quote, this has the potential to affect every writer. Disney's argument is that they have purchased the rights, but not the obligations of the contract. In other words, they believe they have the right to publish the works, but are not obligated to pay the writer no matter what the contract says. If we let this stand, all a publisher would have to do to break a contract would be to sell it to a sibling company. End quote. Cowell asks fans of Foster or those who believe that a writer's work has value to please share and let Disney know. Yeah, the Twitterverse has been in an uproar about this.
Oh, yeah. I haven't even seen. I've been focusing on the NBA free agency on Twitter. So like, who are the Sixers going to get next? So I haven't seen this uproar. What are some of the highlights of the uproar?
Oh, just a lot of big names taking this and running. It's the same take all around.
It's the same take as all of this.
Yeah. Is that this is a huge, potentially a huge problem for just people's, you know, rights
in general,
copyright law in general. Yeah.
I don't understand. Like, my wonder on this is I wonder if Disney like budgeted certain things and then was just like, oh, we didn't budget for that. Let's get around it with this legal argument that probably is going to kick the can down the road for 2 years. And then that's what it'll do. And then something legal will come up, and then they'll start paying the royalties after they've gotten all the Disney Plus money. Like, that's what it feels like to me, but I don't really know.
Mandalorian, we're in deep.
I know.
We need you to bail us out. Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of speculation here. You know, it's one of those things where I'm not a lawyer, but from what I read, it doesn't make any sense. Like, it's like, what is their legal argument, really?
Right.
It is unprecedented in unprecedented times.
You've purchased the rights, but not the obligations of the contract. I see in that there needing to be language in a contract. There really needs to be language in a contract that says when a publisher is acquired by another entity, this, you know, obligation to these, the terms of this contract must be followed, or a renegotiation can be initiated by the creator, but not by the company buying the rights. It seems
That's one of those things where just, it's like, but I think it's already covered just in the sense of it being like a contract. Like, the contract should say, like, this contract shall act like a contract, you dum-dums.
Yeah. There's so much other language in there. That language needs to be the first thing. Contracts are contracts. They bind agreements. Both parties.
You away.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, I do hope that this is resolved, because
what do you think the indie authors need to know about this?
Well, I think that indie authors, when they are going to be able to have a little more negotiating power in the future, that is the kind of language that needs to be in there. That if the rights change hands, if Netflix does the movie rights to this, but then they sell it to whatever 20 years from now Netflix is, then they have power. It needs to give the creator power. And I think that getting a lawyer or whoever to negotiate that sort of stuff with having those rights in mind, of just like the transfer of rights. Because look, I mean, we had Quibi lasted about 4 months, and now the material from Quibi is probably going to be sold off. And so someone wrote something that went to Quibi, one would assume. And now those rights are going to be transferred pretty quickly, and one hopes that they would continue to earn money off of it, unlike Quibi's investors.
Right. And I think it also is like, well, you would assume that Disney has this pretty much standard. Like, they're not going to pull anything. They're Disney. They're a big company that works with big, you know, big names, and the big names aren't going to let this happen. And then you're like, oh, maybe you're wrong.
Maybe they were sneaky. Maybe they've learned to be sneakier. Let's move on to number four.
Number four.
Audiobooks delivered. Book Funnel has supported direct ebook sales delivery for years, and now one of their biggest requests, delivery of audiobooks, is finally here. Quote, "We've been working on audiobook delivery for over a year," says Book Funnel's Damon Courtney. "We've been beta testing with authors and readers for months. Today, we're launching audiobooks as an open beta, and you're invited." End quote. Every current Book Funnel feature for ebooks can now be used to send your audiobooks, such as delivering art copies, gifting an audiobook to a reader, delivering direct sales of audiobooks, creating unique codes for audiobooks, using an audiobook as a reader magnet, or sending your Patreon subscribers your audiobook. Quote, "Book Funnel already does it for all your ebooks. Now we do it for your audiobooks too." I remember almost 2 years ago to the day, I was at the 20 books speaker party thingy, and Damon was talking about audiobook delivery with me. And that was so definitely more than over a year. They've been at least thinking about it for 2+ years. And I'm so excited, because once again, we have another reason to not go straight through Audible, not go 7-year exclusive contract. This opens up a lot, and I love it. I know you have opinions on it too, Claire. What are your thoughts?
This is great. That's my opinion.
All right. Back from you, Claire. No.
Yeah, this is huge. I mean, I think it's huge because it's such a versatile tool. So there's not just one way you can use this. You can use this to leverage so much with your audiobook sales. Yeah. I mean, the ability to, you know, give out more review copies. If you own, this is of course, if you own the rights and you can distribute Amazon or Audible exclusive, you can put samples up there. You can do all kinds of stuff. And now we're going to have more group promos for audiobooks. So you can actually get the audiobook readers suddenly, you know, because that powerful tool of collaboration, like sharing readers or sharing listeners now, is the number one like free way to market books, in my opinion. And you can leverage that so much more easily now that it's like your marketing costs are going to go down. You know, you can make that money back on later books in the series if you give it out for free. It's just, it's very exciting.
Yeah. No, I think that if you've kept the mindset that not going exclusive with my audio is going to give more opportunities, this is one of the things you may have been waiting for, the ability to do more distribution on your own. I am particularly excited about delivering direct sales of audiobooks. Because if you sell a book on Audible $12.99 or what have you, maybe you make $2. If you sell a $12.99 audiobook on your own website, you make something along the lines of $12.50. You keep more of the money by doing it direct. Mm-hmm. And going direct is not for the faint of heart. The best ways to take advantage of it are having a lot of traffic that you control, like via an email list or a consistently publishing blog or what have you. And that's hard to do in of itself. But going direct, generally, you have to keep track of a lot of things that you wouldn't normally keep track of. But this may simplify that process. You're not going through a Shopify store or PayHip or something. This will make that easier. And if you are planning on doing a significant amount of audio in the future, this might be the thing that puts 90% more profit in your pocket.
And think about the upsell. You do, because WhisperSync or whatever it is, they offer that upsell on Amazon. Maybe people don't buy it. And then they get your book and you put at the very front of that book. First thing they open to is click here to buy the audio to listen along for, you know, you could do $3.99. Suddenly you're making $3.99 more off your book just because they may not listen to it. But if someone says, oh, I can get the, you know, tells me I can get an audiobook of the same thing for free or for, you know, $3.99 or something that cheap, I'm going to grab it because maybe I don't have as much time to sit and read as I want, but it's, you know, suddenly it's versatile. So you have even every 50th person buy that. And you're suddenly making all this money and you're just advertising on your own territory. So in selling direct, that is just, I love this. I'm so excited about this.
Imagine. So you have that link in the front of your book is mm-hmm. one way. What if you are running direct sales ads from Facebook to your book for sale on your own website that is for sale via BookFunnel's ability to deliver direct ebooks. And on the thank you page for buying that book, you have the link for the one time, get 50% off the audiobook as well.
All right, you Mr. Make Sales Funnel.
90-something% off of that ebook, 90-something% off that audiobook. So there are a lot of challenges with going direct, but going back to Kukrul again with his Go Direct book, now the materials are coming into play, the tools that we need to make going direct even that much more profitable.
Absolutely. I mean, you can send them straight to a landing page that's a bundle of the book and the audiobook together. It costs you nothing to bundle them.
I'm pretty sure Damon brought that up when I talked with him two years ago.
Because suddenly you have a really good excuse to charge them more. They're getting more and you're not spending any more on your actual advertising.
Yes.
I love it.
Love it. Yes. All of it. All of the direct sales. Thank you, Damon. Thank you, Damon. All right. Let's go to you up for number three.
Number three.
Hogtied and branded. Quote, success on Amazon is about more than the numbers of sales you make in a day, says Amazon in their email to authors. Quote, it's also about building brand loyalty among your readers. Starting immediately, KDP authors advertising in the US can utilize sponsored brand ads to help you connect readers to their books with customizable ads that appear in Amazon shopping results. According to Amazon, running sponsored brands with sponsored products can help you increase visibility, differentiate your brand as an author, with custom landing pages that showcase your titles, quote, in an immersive environment, feature a collection or a series of your books in one ad. You also have the option to use a video ad, still in beta, where the click takes the shopper to your Amazon detail page. Sponsored brand ads are available now in the ads console, in addition to sponsored products and lock screen ads. Brian, is this the answer to all of our questions?
Maybe some questions about why are Amazon ads costing me so much money? Let me translate a little bit of this for you guys. Claire is a lot more experienced with the sponsored brand ads, so I'm sure you'll have a lot to add because this was available if you were in the Amazon Advantage dashboard, which you can't get into anymore, but the early adopters snuck their way in.
And now that advantage is lost.
Yes. Sorry. Okay. According to Amazon, running sponsored brands with sponsored products can help you increase visibility. So just kind of like running ads on Facebook to get more likes for your page.
Yeah. Yeah.
Visibility. Because that makes all the money.
Right. That exposure. All of the money.
It's that exposure. You get an exposure, kid.
Right. All right. You can get arrested for that too.
That's true. Differentiates your brand as an author with custom landing pages in an immersive environment. So much like lock screen ads, which I have decried many times for sending people to a page that is not your book's page, sending to a middleman, an intermediary page. Sponsored brand ads also do not send you right to your book's page. They send you to an intermediary page. Does that mean clicks are different than a regular sponsored product ad? Yes, clicks are not clicks. Detailed page views are actually clicks. So you need to kind of use the different terminology. Left is right, up is down, like theater. So let's see.
Is that
stage
my
click?
My right or
stage right?
Yeah.
Feature a collection of series of your books in one ad. That I think is nice. And the other thing is these do show up at the top.
They do, which means that people accidentally click them a lot more.
I was trying to throw Amazon a bone here, Claire, but really these are, I'm going to give y'all inside information. This is from my Amazon Ad School Facebook group. This is exactly what I posted to my paid students. Early thoughts on sponsored brand ads, erratic, spendy, and risky. I'd avoid unless making $500 plus per month in profit. Claire, you've run a lot of sponsored brand ads. Do you agree with what I posted on the group?
Yes. Yes. It will spend your money somewhat like BookBub once it starts running. And it's not necessarily going to deliver you the results. You need to have big margins, I think. You know, how having good read through is going to be a must. And, you know, we're talking sponsored brands. So probably your books are in a series. So that's a good start.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yes. What was it? Risky, risky and
erratic, spendy, and risky. Well, proceed with caution. I have used this in many GIFs this week. Before I posted that post, whenever there is a new thing, there's this, I don't know, like Claire, there's got to be some hormonal thing behind this. Like you'll have to tell me what this is, if it's just a giant wallop of dopamine. But assuming that the new thing is the push red button, success that we've been waiting for? Is that just we got hit by dopamine and we really just want to keep going and we assume that that is the savior of us? Or is it a combination of things? What would your guess?
I think it would depend on the person. I mean, we want to assume that we're in this together with Amazon, right? Because when we sell a book, they get 30 to 65%, depending on right. our contract with them. So right. it does behoove them for us to sell books.
Yes.
I don't know that our interests align all the way to the end on that. Right? Because it yes. also behooves them to get us to spend a ton of money on their ad platform. And they don't need, we don't even need to sell books for them to make money that way. It's just money. Say, you know, oh yeah, you're going to get more visibility. Yes, you could.
Yes, you could.
That's not guaranteed, right? We don't have unlimited ad budgets. So it's not just about brand recognition. We need them to buy when they see the ad.
And if they can't even buy in the regular ads, someone clicks and then they can buy. In these ads, there needs to be another click. Mm-hmm. They have to click twice.
Yeah. I mean, and I
that's unhelpful.
It that is unhelpful.
Lowers conversion.
Absolutely. And once you get some data, you can go in and look at your detail page views versus your clicks. Some ads for sponsored brands, it's almost even. So it looks like, you know, people are clicking through from one to the other pretty frequently. And sometimes it's less than 50%. And in that case, I'm like, okay, and now I'm paying, you know, twice as much per click, basically. So you want to also monitor that in those. And if that's good, then you can make it. I have plenty of profitable sponsored brand ads, but I also have a much bigger budget than a lot of people. I don't do it for all of my series because not all of my series have enough books for the read-through to pay off.
Right.
So it's a very specific thing. You really need to look at your setup and what you're advertising and if you can realistically make that money. But if you can, it's pretty nice.
Yes. All the nightmares I've had about authors accidentally spending $1,000 on lock screen will now be nightmares about authors accidentally spending $1,000 on sponsored brand ads.
I one time accidentally put $65 instead of 65 cents for a bid. And it was on an ad that had a lifetime budget, not a daily spend. Whew, man, that it was like $250 went in a day.
Yes. Those are all those nightmares.
Yeah. So
now I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight. It won't just be because Riley woke up. Let's go to number two.
Number two.
Pikachu, I choose me. Does your book deserve to be seen? Now you can nominate your own books for Kindle deals and Prime Reading. Amazon just released a new page within your KDP Marketing Manager that puts the power to ask in your own hands. The new page, which is still labeled beta, lets you nominate two eligible titles at a time for Kindle Deals and one at a time for Prime Reading. Quote, Kindle Deals and Prime Reading have limited space and not all nominated titles will be selected to participate. If we select your title, we'll email with the details and you can accept or decline the offer, says Amazon. To nominate a title, go to your marketing page and choose the promotions. Similar to KDP Select, titles are automatically nominated again at the end of the 90-day period, unless you uncheck the box under Manage Nomination. In a regular week, this would be the number one story. This is not a regular week.
This is not.
This is. And part of the reason this is not number one is because we don't know. Will Amazon accept 0% of these nominations? Will Amazon accept 5% like a BookBub? Will they accept 30% and there will be Kindle deals all over the place? I don't really know, but what was your first reaction to this, Claire?
My first reaction was, hey, I should probably go give this a shot. So that's what I did. Yeah. I went and nominated a couple books. Yeah, like, why not? If your series is in Kindle Unlimited, it's like, sure, go for it. I mean, it's not going to, I don't think it'll sell less than whatever you're selling. You know, if this book is like selling like crazy and you're selling it at $3.99 like crazy and they're gonna want to move it down to 99 cents or whatever, maybe then it's not for you. But if this is backlist stuff, I don't see why you wouldn't just go, you know, nominating your backlist.
Right. This is interesting. So it's a whole new tab on KDP. You can decide whether you're going to enroll a book on KDP Select, choose whether to do an Amazon ad, choose what title you want to feature on Author Central, run the price promotion, and then nominating the books. Very, very, very interesting. If you click the nominate a book, you just pick one and party from there.
About 20 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. So this seems like it should be considered to add this to the usual submit for a BookBub featured deal every so often.
Right.
This could be a part of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or just go in.
Keep it checked. Yeah. I mean, why not? There are a few reasons that I mentioned. Why not? But generally, free backlist, why not? That's kind of when I see something like this, I'm like, yeah, I'll give it a try. Like, I'll, you know, I'll risk success here.
Risking success with H. Claire Taylor. I don't know. I think that should be your new podcast. In addition to this one, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
We shall see. Jury will remain out on this until we know more. I think we can get on to the number one story. I think it's just a matter with that one. Try and see what happens. Let's go into number one of the week.
And now the number one top five news item.
Audiblegate deflate. Following petitions with over 12,000 signatures, Amazon has made changes to its return policy for Audible books, according to Ally in a letter from the Audiobook Creation Exchange. Audible has announced that starting January 1st, 2021, the company will pay royalties for any title returned more than 7 days following purchase. This change followed a petition by the Authors Guild that demanded Audible end its practice of encouraging returns or exchanges and deducting the earned royalties from authors' accounts. The guild suggested that Audible promote this easy exchange policy as a benefit to increase its subscriber base at the expense of authors' earnings. In a related story, ACX has announced it will beef up its audio quality assurance and support teams to ensure new submissions are checked within 30 business days. Hat tip to Darren Sapp on the latter story.
So over 12,000 authors signed this petition. I saw it when it was at about 3,000. So 9,000 of those signatures came yesterday. If I was as good at advertising as this Authors Guild petition was, I would be in a bigger apartment.
You're
I don't
not
know.
Capitalizing on outrage enough.
I'm not capitalizing. Man, I really shouldn't have focused on kindness, Claire. Killing with Kindness is not the name of my other podcast.
No, Killing with Outrage is...
Killing with Outrage. So this seems better. If we had to compare objectively, lifetime returns that extract royalties from authors versus after 7 days not extracting royalties from authors. Objectively, the latter is better than the former.
Yes.
So it's very good that progress has been made. Would you agree?
Yes, we love progress. Unless this comes with a separate column for returns, it seems pretty hollow to me. I think that's really the issue that bugs me the most is that they will not be transparent about how many returns there are. So right now, for those who are not familiar with this, on the statement, it says like total units. So it doesn't break it down into total sales and total returns. It just says total units. The numbers have already been, you know, added there.
Right.
And so then it creates so much space for speculation and guessing and obsessing about, well, if it says I sold two today, did I actually sell seven and have five returns? And so just by putting that column there that says how many returns, suddenly Amazon is accepting somewhat accountability for that. Or right. Audible is saying, okay, we will at least give you the information that you deserve. So we still don't know how much this is going to affect. We don't know if people have been returning these audiobooks within 7 days or within more than 7 days. And it doesn't take that long to listen to an audiobook generally. And if people are exploiting this, they're going to be listening to a lot of audiobooks. So the problem is we still don't know how this is going to affect things. I think it's a logical assumption to say that it's going to cut down on some of the returns by narrowing that window, but it's still an assumption until we can get that column.
Yeah, we need the data. I wonder if, because to my knowledge, ACX was not always a part of Audible. I believe in a Create Space kind of way, it was purchased. I don't know that for a fact, but it has always seemed that way because the reporting has always been a little different than what the KDP marketplace. And obviously, Create Space eventually merged into KDP with KDP Print, and they started moving all of that over, but they never were able to accurately port over all of the old data. All of that old Create Space data, you might be able to find it on a month by month basis on some reports, but it's a real pain. Mm-hmm. I wonder if the reason that reporting for Audible is so funky is because they just never decided to integrate it in the same kind of way as CreateSpace and KDP did. And as a result, they're using whatever ACX has always used to track sales and royalties. Because let's face it, you get a royalty statement from ACX and you're like, what is that, 3-point font? And you're like trying to look in there and figure it out, and it's confusing, and different units are sold in different ways with different prices and different royalties. It's weird. It's just a weird report. Mm-hmm. That, like, I understand there's different ways to purchase audiobooks, and maybe there's only a couple of ways to purchase ebooks, but it's weird and should and could be simplified. What you're describing would be one of several things they could and should do to become more transparent.
Yes. It's all, everything on that confusing statement is a decision that was made. And, you know, like, these things, they do sometimes come back kind of weird and garbled if they've gone through too much, you know, committee decision or whatever. But I just can't imagine anyone who knows anything about accounting wouldn't know that you have to have different columns for these two things. Yeah. Anyone who knows anything about the business that they're in wouldn't say, it's probably important. It could probably be useful for people to know how many of their product is returned.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm just very hesitant to give the benefit of the doubt on this because it just is, I don't necessarily think it's malicious, but sure, it's stupid. If it's a mistake, it's a dumb mistake. But at the same time, this is exactly what should happen, is people should be looking at this and pushing back and, you know, coming together and saying, nope, we're going to bring this to your attention until it's resolved. That's how things get done.
Killing with outrage.
Killing with outrage.
I do want to bring up the point. I'm glad that Audible is beefing up their quality assurance, because I know multiple authors who were seeing a 2 to 3 month wait on their audiobooks coming through, some even longer than that. And to our knowledge, Audible makes a lot of money. Amazon makes a lot of money. There's no reason why they couldn't see an increase in submissions in a growing segment of the publishing industry and staff up for that. They, like you just so eloquently put, someone made a decision about that. Someone made a decision, no, we have a hard cap on 20 people on this team. And I know from working on a support desk, my wife worked on a support team for a time, and she remembers, like, someone would leave and they're like, they're not going to backfill that position. And it's like, that probably happened. They lost people, said, no, we're not going to backfill. And then suddenly there was a 3-month wait time. It's like, wow, I wonder why that happened. Because somebody made a decision. Now, conversely, someone has made a decision to staff up. Could they make a decision to staff up to the point that there were only 10 business days of wait time? Oh, yes. They absolutely could do that, but they are not going to.
Yep, I am with you on this. This is what accountability looks like, accepting that people make decisions and then you go, yeah, this wasn't by accident. So let's see who we need to talk to if this is not working.
Yeah, I feel like between the two of us, we put together a decent Sell More Book Show rant here. What would you like to focus on for the question of the week in such a news-filled, you know, I have an idea.
Okay.
What do you think was the biggest news story this week?
There we go.
Because there was so much. What do you think was the biggest news story this week? And what was your reaction to it?
Yeah, I mean, we've got Audible, we've got the Kindle deals, we've got sponsored brand, audiobooks, Disney. We've got so much here. Oh my gosh. Even our tips.
Even the legacy kit. Bud.
Even Bud and Bub.
Bud and Bub both had big things. I needed another B word. Big happenings. No, that's just happenings with a B. You could go ahead and share your thoughts on the big happenings of the week over at sellmorebookshow.com in the comment section for episode 347. See, that's going to go on the Sell More Book Show bingo now. Bingo 2.0. You can answer that. As you know, we may read one of your answers on the show. So go in there and you could get exposure on the Sell More Book Show from just commenting on the episode. Claire, I won't hit either of us up for wisdom, but what is one thing related to the book world that you are grateful for, that you are thankful for this Thanksgiving week?
Oh my gosh. I am thankful for the people in this world. Just, you know, there's so many of us out there who were a little bit oddball until we found this. Yeah, I mean, like, just people. Indie authors are great. I love working with indie authors. And I love my indie author friends. And I'm grateful to have met people like you and so many others in this industry, because not every industry has this many cool people.
The feeling is mutual, of course. Yeah, likewise. I love the people in the indie author world. I'm going, even though this is a bit counter to a couple of the stories today, we're tough on you, Amazon, but I am grateful that your decimals and balance sheets have allowed thousands upon thousands of authors to build a career. And one day we will, as different tools allow us to, one day many of us will migrate to selling more directly. But there are people who have paid off student loans, bought houses, paid for college tuition on the books that they've worked so hard to sell, mainly from their sales on Amazon. So we are tough on you, Amazon, but we are also grateful that you have given the tools to allow us to create and put these out there and make some money putting our words out into the world. So that's my gratitude, thankfulness for the week.
Beautiful.
Anything to announce? Or are you good to take this right into the Thanksgiving holiday?
Yeah, man, I'm excited about eating food at home.
Me too. I can't wait to eat food at home.
Something I haven't been doing for the last 9 months.
Not at all. I went on an Etsy binge. We have a streamer with a bunch of felt pieces of pie and this little wooden turkey and a pumpkin book. It was like carved into the shape of a book. We've gone all in on Thanksgiving Etsy decorations this year.
Great. Mark the passage of time.
As we do. And you can mark the passage of time by posting a review over at iTunes for the Sell More Book Show. So please go ahead and do that, even if you're listening on Spotify or Pocket Casts or Stitcher or wherever else you listen to our show. For H. Claire Taylor, I'm Brian Cohen. Thank you so much for listening. We're very thankful for you allowing us to share our opinions and news with you on a weekly basis. Have a great holiday week in the States. Have a great regular week outside of the States. We will be back next week with episode 348. Take care, everybody, and gobble, gobble.
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Book Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy bookselling!